about the Shalosh Regalim, and one of the highlights of the experience of Shalosh Regalim used to be Shalosh Pa'amim Bashana Yeira'e Kol Zechurcha Espanei Hashem Elokecha, that we used to have the opportunity to visit and to take the pleasure of being with the Ribono Shel Olam in his abode, in his Beis Hamikdash. Unfortunately today, when we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, we don't have that opportunity to do that, but there's a fascinating point to consider, and that is the following. We don't find in the Torah or in the early years of a Beis Hamikdash that there was any institution of a Beis HaKnesses. The Beis HaKnesses, the shul, says Rabbi Yonasan Eibishitz, was something that came along later on in history. And what got the Chachamim into the idea of starting a Beis HaKnesses was the fact that they realized we no longer have a centralized system. We no longer have a Beis Hamikdash, which was the central focus of the Jewish people. How are we going to ensure that the Jewish people are going to remain connected? What can we do in a generation when they no longer have that focus of the Beis HaMikdash to connect themselves to and to visit a couple of times a year and to offer sacrifices? The Chachamim, in their wisdom and their foresight, came up with the idea of a Beis HaKnesses. And they said that from here on in, we're going to institute a davening that's going to include a Kaddish, a Kedusha, a Barchu, a Chazaras HaShatz, that all require a minyan. Before that, there was no such institution. The very first time that we find any reference to a Beis HaKnesses is in Sefer Yirmiyahu. And there, obviously, Yirmiyahu lived in the time of the end of the period of the Bayis Rishon, right through the period of the Churban Bayis Rishon. So Yirmiyahu HaNavi says as follows, Ve'ez Beis Ha'am Sarfu HaKazdim Ba'esh. And the Beis Ha'am, the house of the people, was burnt by the Kazdim in fire. Says Rashi, what's the Beis Ha'am? What does that mean? The local hotel? The local tavern? No. Rashi says that was the Batei Knesios. That's the first reference we have in Tanakh for any idea of an institution of a Beis HaKnesses, because before that, a Beis HaKnesses never really existed. It started as the period of the Churban Beis HaMikdash was unfolding, and the Chachamim realized, we have to do something to hold on to the people. This is what they did. It is also mentioned in the Gemara that Amar of Yitzchak, Minayin Shehakadosh Baruch Hu Matzei BeBeis HaKnesses. How do we know that God's presence is found in the Beis HaKnesses? Shenemar, as we say, Elokim Nitzav Ba'adas Kel. It should be no wonder that the Navi Yirmiyahu is the first one to mention the Beis HaKnesses, and this is exactly what the Gemara Megillah Daf Chavtes picks up on, that the Navi in Sefer Yecheskel, who is a contemporary of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, also says, living through that period in history, living through the Churban Beis HaMikdash, he says, Va'ehi lahem lemikdash ma'at. That's a pasuk in Tanakh. And it's a pasuk in Sefer Yecheskel where he says, I assure you, the Jewish people, you're going to live through a time when there's no longer going to be a Beis HaMikdash, but don't worry. Va'ehi lahem lemikdash ma'at. I will make sure, Elu batik nesios abatim midrashos. I'll make sure that you have an opportunity to have encounters with the Shekhinah, to be a centralized Jewish people through the institution of a Beis HaKnesses. Imagine. What has kept the Jewish people together throughout all these millennia in our exile is the shul. Imagine if we didn't have the institution of a shul, of a minyan, of Dvarim Shebekdusha, and everybody would daven on their own, we would never have stuck together. And that was the incredible wisdom of Chazal, that upon the destruction of the Churban Beis HaMikdash, they decided we have to do something to make sure that the Jewish people stick together. That's what the Navi Yirmiyah and the Navi Yecheskel teach us, respectively, in their nevuahs. Now, from the fact that the Beis HaKnesses took over in some way the Beis HaMikdash, there are a number of halachas which are patterned off of that very idea. And when we talk about a Beis HaKnesses today, we have to look back at the way the Beis HaMikdash was run, the way it was formulated, the way it was structured, and that's very often how we glean how a Beis HaKnesses should be run as well. So there's one very fascinating halacha. If we have time, we'll get to another one. But in Parsha Shoftim, the Pasuk tells us as follows. Lo sita lecha asherah kol eitz. One is not allowed to plant in Asherah, made out of wood. Eitz al mizbach Hashem Elokecha. So we have an Avera that you're not allowed to plant in Asherah, a tree, next to the Mizbeach of Hashem. It's fascinating. A few weeks ago, I was in the OU with my father. So I go in on Fridays, and all kinds of interesting questions come in on Fridays when he's there. So one question that was raised was by somebody in Teaneck who just bought a house from a non-Jewish couple, and there are two Jewish neighbors who were the neighbors for many, many years. And they informed this new family that bought this house from the non-Jews that, by the way, when the family originally moved in 30 years ago, one of the first things that they did was they went onto the front lawn, they planted a tree, and after that tree grew, it was planted l'shem avodah zarah. Every morning, the family used to go out and bow down to the tree. So this family that just bought the house, mamish has an asherah growing in their front yard, and they were asking, how do we perform the mitzvah of bir avodah zarah? So my father turns to us and he says, where do you look to find such a halacha? Who discusses this? This mitzvah is one that almost never comes up. When do you have the opportunity? I know that this past Friday they had the burning ceremony. It was a very exciting event. How often do you have the opportunity to actually be mevara v'rezara, to burn down an asherah tree and make sure to uproot it from the ground? So these kind of shalas come up. But the original pasuk is that one is not allowed to plant an asherah etzel mizbach Hashem Elokecha. Says the Sefri there on that pasuk. Uminayin lenotea ilan ubone bayis baharabayis. How do you know that not only are you not allowed to plant an asherah tree next to the mizbach, but also how do you know that you're not allowed to plant any ilan, any tree on the harabayis or the vicinity, ubone bayis, or there's some extra space on the harabayis, and I want to build myself a little house there. I'm going to pay rent to the Beis Hamikdash, but I want to build a house. How do you know that that also is a violation of lo sasa lecha asherah? Says the pasuk, because we're told kol eitz. Not only does that mean this asherah tree, but it means any variation of a tree is not allowed to be planted in the immediate vicinity of the Beis Hamikdash or the harabayis. Rabbi Lezer Omer, and Rabbi Lezer says, we take it even further. How do you know that you're not allowed to build in Achsadra Ba'azara, a porch, a lookout in the Azara? We want to make more room for everybody. It was very crowded. So we want to make a second floor. We want to build it up with wood, and we want to have a whole structure to be safe. Says the Gemara, how do we know you're not allowed to do that? Rabbi Lezer tells us, also we learn that from the pasuk of Kol Eitz. One is not allowed to build anything, any eitz, that is going to enhance and beautify the makam of the Azara, or the Beis Hamikdash, the Harabayis. One is not allowed to do that at all. So the Rambam codifies this lahalacha, and the Rambam says one is not allowed to do this. And afal pi, he says, even though she'asa lenoi uliyofi, even though I do it in order to enhance, to beautify the Beis Hamikdash, to beautify the Harabayis, still one is not allowed to be involved in such an activity. And the Rambam says someone who does violate will get Malkus. Why do we take this so seriously? What's the big prohibition about planting a tree? If it's an Asherah tree and it's something that's the Shema Vodazara, of course you're not allowed to. But why should there be a problem just to plant some palm trees or something else? Won't that beautify to put a rose bush next to the Beis Hamikdash or to put some flowers outside of the Azara? Why should that be a problem? So the Rambam says, Mipnei Shahaya Zed Derech Ha'akum, because this is the way the non-Jews used to beautify their edifices when they used to go and have their places of worship. The way they would enhance it is by planting trees, by planting other things around their place of worship. And therefore, says the Rambam, since that's what they used to do, and they wanted to beautify it for people to enjoy the experience, therefore the Rambam says, we have the prohibition as well against doing that in our Beis HaKnesses, in our Beis HaMikdash, or in our Harabai. So the Rishonim discuss, is it only the Azara itself? Is it even the Harabais? Big discussion in the Rishonim, but the Rashi and the Ramban feel that it's even on the Harabayis that we assume the prohibition exists. So Rabbi Kiva Eger on Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Beis HaKnesses, Simon Kuf Nun, raises the following issue from Rabbi David Arama. Rabbi David Arama was one of the Kadmonim. So Rabbi Kiva Eger raises the issue and he says, the same way that we assume that you're not allowed to plant any tree or any enhancement around the Harabayis or the Beis HaMikdash, so too, says Rabbi David Arama, you're not allowed to plant any of that in the immediate vicinity of a Beis HaKnesses. After all, we said, the Gemara tells us that a Beis HaKnesses takes the place of a Beis HaMikdash, it's the Mikdash Ma'at, so therefore we should assume that it takes on the same rule. And losita lecha asherah means not only am I not allowed to plant any trees near the Harabayis or the Beis HaMikdash, so too I'm not allowed to do that today in a Beis HaKnesses either. And part of this reason is because the Pasuk says losita lecha asherah, and as the Rambam tells us, it's like a offshoot of B'chukos Seyem Lo Seylechu, because you are acting in the ways in which the Gentiles acted, in the way they built their own places of worship. So this is a major problem, which is discussed by Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger and his Binyon Sion. It's discussed by the Netziv and his Tshuvas Meshiv Dabar and by many others. How is it that we nowadays plant trees outside of our shuls, outside of our places of worship? And furthermore, the Maharsham and others discuss forgetting about the trees that we plant. What about the fact that we have nowadays pews in all of our shuls? Isn't that the same as having a balcony in the Beis HaMikdash, as having a balcony in the Azara? And that's part of the prohibition of losita lecha asherah. So how do we have the ability to do this in our shuls, to build various structures, even though it's going to enhance lenoi or liyofi? How do we have a bima screwed into the floor? How do we have pews that are screwed into the floor? How can we do such a thing? Isn't that a prohibition of losita lecha asherah? And the truth is, the Yerushalmi tells us that there is one caveat. If you're going to do it as only a temporary structure, it's something that's not going to be there for more than a certain period of time, the Yerushalmi says there's no problem to do it. But if it's something that you plan to keep there for the long term, that's when we run into issues and that's when we have the problem. And that's what all the Achronim try to deal with. On the one hand, we have Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes from David Arama, one of the great Kadmonim, that the same rule that applies to the Beis HaMikdash also applies to a Beis HaKnesses. If that's true, all of our shuls are going to have a major problem. So this is a very difficult issue. How do you get out of it? But the Achronim somehow feel that, the rule somehow doesn't apply to the way we run our Batei Knesios. And even though Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes from David Arama, for some reason we don't follow, and we don't make a direct parallelism from the Beis HaMikdash to the way that we structure a Beis HaKnesses today. There is a very surprising discussion in the Stechemed when he talks about whether or not one is allowed to put in, whether one is allowed to install a heating system into a shul. So he says there were many shuls that were very cold. They were in Russia or somewhere where it was a very cold climate. And the community decided, why not? Now we have the opportunity to install a heating element. Why don't we try to put that into the shul? This way it will be more comfortable for the people who come and participate in the davening. So you'll say, what can possibly be wrong with that? So there were those who raised issues that one is not allowed to do that because the same way we didn't have a heating element in the Beis HaMikdash, so too we're not allowed to have a heating element installed in our Batei Knesios today. Meaning they took it literally. That when we say a Beis HaKnesses is a Mikdash Ma'at, that means all the rules that apply to a Beis HaMikdash apply to a Beis HaKnesses as well. Where do we find the prohibition of putting a heating element into the Beis HaMikdash? And where do they extrapolate from that to bring that halacha over to a Beis HaKnesses as well? So the Stechemed discusses the issue, and they quote the following story. That Rav Meir Shapiro became the Rav in a certain community in Pietrakov, and there Rav Meir Shapiro was a very recognized gadol. And he accepts the position, and one of the first things that they ask him to do is, please allow us to put in the heating system because it's so cold in the shul. So Rav Meir Shapiro didn't know, is this a setup? Is this something they discussed in the past? And all of a sudden, now that they have a new rabbi, they're trying to ram it through. So he didn't know what to do, so he goes to speak to the Charka of a Rebbe to ask him what he thinks, what's your psak? So the Charka of a Rebbe tells him he thinks that it's not permissible at all. Said Rav Meir Shapiro, maybe I have a proof why I think it's not permissible. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin Daf Yud Ches, that when they used to put together the committee for who was going to decide whether or not to be Ma'abar the Shana, should we have an extra month this year or not, so it says that there were certain members of the Jewish people who were disqualified from being on that committee. One of the people who was disqualified was a Kohen Gadol. He was not able to be consulted about whether or not we should have an extra month this year. Says the Gemara, why? Because he has ulterior motives. The Kohen Gadol has to do the Avodah on Yom Kippur, and he has to walk around the Beis HaMikdash all day long barefoot. He's going to want us to say we should not have an extra month because if Yom Kippur is going to be 1 month later, his feet are going to be freezing cold. It's going to be in November instead of in October. So therefore, says the Gemara, the Kohen Gadol is disqualified from being on this panel of who can be Ma'abar the Shana because we're concerned that he's going to have his own ideas in mind. Again, it's hard to imagine a Kohen Gadol has nothing better to worry about than his cold feet on Yom Kippur, but that's what the Gemara says. We don't want to have anyone who has any kind of agenda, therefore the Kohen Gadol is out. Ask the Rav Meir Shapiro, what do you mean? Why is he going to be cold? They didn't have a heater in the Beis HaMikdash. They weren't able to heat up the floors. They weren't able to figure out a way that the Kohen Gadol can do the Avodah in a way that he's going to be comfortable. What were they so concerned about? Said Rav Meir Shapiro, it seems obvious, it seems clear, that they weren't allowed to have such a system in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, he says, the added Chiddush that the Stechemed quotes, that the same way they weren't allowed to have it there, we are not allowed to have that system set up in a Beis HaKnesses either. Again, it's taking this halacha very seriously, perhaps to an extreme, and we're very lucky that we don't adopt that opinion of many, the overwhelming majority of Achronim that the Stechemet quotes assumed that it was usher, that it was not permissible, but we don't generally assume that that is the psak that we accept. Either way, we assume that a Beis HaKnesses, after the Beis HaMikdash is no longer with us, and we don't have the opportunity to experience its presence, the Beis HaKnesses has, for many of us, taking the place, as we call it, a Mikdash Ma'ad. It has taken the place of what a Beis HaMikdash represents, what a Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be for all of us, and it has taken over what the central focus of the Jewish people should be at a time when we no longer have the opportunity to be centralized through that experience of a Beis HaMikdash. Rav Hanani ben Akasha Omer.